Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
One of the end zone punt. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Still in learning mode here.
And welcome to
Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. So glad you could join us. Alongside Jeff Fiegels, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes, breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You could also use hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We'll get to your tweets. We'll get to your phone calls. Jeff, how's everything?
Hey, it's great, Lance. You know, we're in a different environment.
I know. It's good to be working with you in this
absolutely.
New format.
Absolutely. Lance and I now can add one more studio to our repertoire of where we work together. And there's nobody better than Lance, my man here. He's always setting me up with good questions, and I'm looking forward to spending the next 60 minutes with you.
Absolutely. Myself as well, looking forward to interacting with the fans. And let's start with the injuries first. Tom Coughlin had a conference call yesterday where he reflected on the loss to the Dallas Cowboys, updated some injury news, and there were a few guys that got banged up from this contest, most notably on the offensive line. Will Beatty left. He got shaken up. He did return. It doesn't appear to be anything serious. Adam Snyder went down with a knee injury, and it was Jeff Schwartz's first game back, and it was a positive for him to finally get back on the field, Jeff, get some reps underneath his belt, and start to build some continuity with his teammates.
Well, I thought he played particularly well, especially in the first half. You know, the guy has not had any contact in at least 12 weeks, and, you know, I had a chance to talk to him a little bit before the game as I was going up to the from the booth down to our pregame, and I asked him, I said, you know, what are you excited about? He goes, I'm excited about getting hit again. You know, I said, well, there you got it. That's the mentality of an offensive lineman right there, you know. But he said it's going to take a little bit of used to getting, you know, coming back and, you know, getting hit again. But I think that they played well, and I think that he did, particularly in the run game. I thought he had some really good blocks to be able to get Andre Williams and Rashad Jennings some good yardage. And then, of course, in the pass protection, that first, you think about the first half, Lance, three possessions, three touchdowns, that protection on the offensive line held up and was able to get Eli to be able to have some time and execute some plays, and they got the running game going. And then so that offensive line, and with Snyder in there, kind of gave him a jump start. But it sounds to me like Snyder's going to be okay. And Will Beatty, hopefully he's okay. And just walking in here from the lunchroom, I just ran into Justin Pugh, and I asked him, you know, how is he doing? And he said that, you know, it's good. He's going to give it a go for practice, I guess, this week. At least that's what he said, whether that happens or not. But he's got a good attitude about it, and that's a good thing to see. So, and we'll see what he can do.
Pugh nursing that quad injury that forced him to miss his first game with the Giants. He had started every single game since he was drafted, so he's been very consistent, very durable. This is what Tom Coughlin had to say about Jeff Schwartz's play, as Jeff was just alluding to. He said, quote, he did okay for a guy who has not been involved for as long amount of time as that has been for Jeff. For him to go out, see the fastball the way it is, not only in the league but in the division, thought he stood up, did well. He certainly would be a guy that would tell you honestly that there are things that he definitely can improve upon, but for him to go out, do the things he did, with his little practice or play time that he's had in the last 2+ months, I thought he did a fine job. And as you mentioned, there were a number of positive runs in this game compared to some of the previous games. They actually had 8 runs for 5 yards or more, and that was the second highest mark this season.
Pretty incredible that we have to sit here and say it was, you know, really did some good things. They had 8 yards of 5 yards or more, you know. But I guess that's a building block to try to get this running game going. I mean, certainly I thought that the running game did a little bit better. They're still not where they want to be offensively, because as we both know, we've been talking about this long enough, that this offense runs through the running game, and I think that once they get that going, this could be a pretty good thing for the Giants offense. But ultimately, you know, Jeff Schwartz, he's a veteran, so you would expect him to come back and play the way he did, and he answered the bell. It's good.
The other notable injury was Jameel McClain, who suffered a knee injury. Tom Coughlin very optimistic that he should be able to practice this week, so that's a positive. Despite all of the players that were banged up, it does look like they should be full go for practice when that starts up on Wednesday. You were alluding to the fact about the running game having some positives, Jeff, and one of the things that jumped out to me in this last contest, and this is just as effective as running the football, when you utilize the running backs as receivers, and Rashad Jennings had 8 receptions in this last game, and a lot of it was yardage after the catch that he was able to tally.
Well, I think that they'd like to be able to have that in their repertoire when the running game is working too. But as we all know in this West Coast offense, just a little check down pass to a running back for 4 or 5 yards is an extension of the running game when you think about it. So if they can be effective and throw that pass to Rashad Jennings, which we know he can catch the ball. You even saw Andre Williams catch a little middle screen there that worked. In fact, both teams ran their screen game very well in that game last Sunday night. But the Giants, I think, in this offense, if you look back what Ben McAdoo and that Packers offense was able to do, their screen game was probably one of the best in the league. And I think they're developing that over the year because it takes time, the screen game, to really learn how to run it successfully. And I think that's another option that they can get involved in and get it as a feather in their cap to be able to run it well against these other teams.
When McAdoo was with Green Bay, players like James Starks was utilized heavily in that passing game.
Yeah.
So that's a great point in terms of them trying to at least adapt that within the Giants system. And we were talking about this in the weeks while Jennings was hurt. I mean, one of the strong points and a big reason why they brought him over via free agency is his versatility.
Yeah.
It's not just his ability to run between the tackles, but it's his ability to get out in open space, catch the ball, and then do damage after that.
And you saw he had a big play in the passing the screen game. He ran, I don't know, 20-something yards.
Yeah.
He had a big play, and that's why he's here. I think we've already seen his leadership skills. I think the guys respect him. He's a hard worker, and I think that going into next year, and that's kind of what we seem to be talking about right now, is what's going to happen in his next 5 games of the season and, you know, what's going to shake out for next season. But offensively, you got to be a little excited from the skill position when you think about Victor Cruz coming back and the way that Odell Beckham is playing. I think you've seen some very positive things in the out of the tight end position. I mean, these guys are scoring touchdowns more than we thought they would. They just got to work on their blocking a little bit better. But and we all know that the offensive line can play better. But from that standpoint, you got to be pretty excited about this offense.
Absolutely, and a number of positives that Tom Coughlin brought up during his conference call, and I just want to go over that before we do get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You could also weigh in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Jeff and I will be checking in on your tweets throughout the course of this program. The fact that on third down, they were very efficient. They had 35 minutes in time of possession. And they were good in terms of moving the chains. On the first 3 possessions of this game, the Giants scored touchdowns. So when you look at all of that, and this is what Tom Coughlin talked about on his conference call, I mean, that's a recipe to beat the Cowboys.
Well, you think those statistics that you just mentioned, you would think that we were talking about the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
Because they got time of possession. They are over 50% on third downs. They win in the running. I mean, this is stuff that you're talking about, but from the Giants' perspective, you're right. When you look at it on paper and you didn't know the outcome of the game, you would think that the Giants had won this game. You know, there is a silver lining, and you know, as players, you look at those things, but the bottom line is the win or the loss. But for us people that we can kind of maybe analyze the game and look at some of the positives and pull out, because I will tell you this, Lance, is that if you're in a coaching staff and these guys have to come into the building every week and have some sort of a plan as how they're going to try to get the guys to rally around the troops. And when you lose 6 games in a row, it becomes more difficult to try to find how to motivate guys. The best way to motivate guys is to show things on film, show them the things that they're doing well, and work on the things that they have to get better. But if you have more things that you're doing well and less things that you're doing not well, it's a good recipe for kind of the environment and the morale of the team. Because I will tell you, I had mentioned to you before we got on the air, is that I was on an Arizona Cardinals team that was 2-14. So I've been through this losing teams before, and it's a tough go. And as a player and as staff and coaches, it's really difficult to come into the building and work every day. But however, that's your job. That's what they pay you to do. They expect you to prepare the way that you're supposed to every single week and go out there and compete and try to win.
Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now. Enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. You can check us out on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat as well. And to get us started on the program, we check in with Marco in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
What's up, Marco?
What's up, Jeff? What's up, Lance?
Doing well, Marco.
Where are you at in Connecticut?
I'm in the New Haven area.
All right, because I got a couple kids up in Connecticut right now. I got one up in Avon and one in Storrs, so they're kind of close to you.
Oh, yeah, that's UConn area there. Yeah,
absolutely. What can do for you?
Well, and Jeff, thanks for the great years that you gave us here as our punter.
You're welcome.
It was awesome having you.
Well, it was nice to be here, trust me.
Thank you. Well, I'm calling for a couple things, but once the other night when I was we were watching this game, and it was so hard to get through this Dallas offensive line. And I was watching there, especially at the end, where they made a point to say how many seconds the offensive line was able to hold us off. I think it was like 7.5 seconds. The graphic showed
on that last drive. Those last
on that
two
last
plays.
Drive, very, yeah. Very frustrating. But you know, Perry Fuel's been under some criticism the last few days that we're sending four guys, and the offensive line is able to hold us off for that long. But you know, but I was thinking about this, and I, aside of how I feel about Perry Fuel going forward, I think these top quarterbacks in the league, they absolutely eat up the blitz. I mean, Peyton Manning especially, and Tony Romo moves pretty well in the pocket. He exploited the blitz the other night with hitting Cole Beasley on that touchdown.
You look at what Flacco did last night to the Saints blitz. I mean,
absolutely.
He just ate him alive. But you are right. I think they do eat him alive. Sorry to interrupt you.
No. It's fine. And so I'm thinking about Pierre-Paul though. And if our defense is set up the way that it is, and just talking about the caliber of quarterbacks that we face in the league, we have to be able to get pressure with that four-man rush. And Pierre-Paul is supposed to be a top defensive end in the league. And I know he's going against probably the best left tackle in the league on the other side. But I'm thinking about him now as we come down this stretch run. What do you guys view as him as going into this offseason? Where do you think his head is at? I'm sure he wants to get a nice check. He wants to make some money. But I'm really nervous about this. I think the Giants are going to give him a fair offer. Obviously, you can't pay him as a top defensive end in the league because he hasn't performed as one.
Sure.
But seeing Akiem Nicks last year, I'm afraid that could be a similar situation. You know, they kind of remind me of each other a little bit now as they enter free agency.
I'll answer your question. I mean, I don't want to get into the comparison of the two, but I will tell you this, that I think that that JPP is giving a little more effort, if you will, this season than Akiem Nicks did last year. I think both of them have a little something in mind with when you're a free agent, and I was a free agent many times. You know, in the back of your mind, when you're playing, you're thinking about, you know, hey, I can't get hurt, and you know, sometimes players, and I'm not saying that JPP thinks this way. I'm just giving you a kind of a wide spectrum of kind of what happens to some guys is that they don't want to get hurt because they think that, you know, obviously that's going to hurt their payday going through. But the bottom line too is you think about, I got to play to get paid, and so I think that comes into question a little bit more. And so if you're not compiling the statistics of what you're supposed to do from a defensive end position and making sacks, we do know, Lance, that JPP has played exceptionally well in the run game, but that's just a component of what a good defensive end and really a guy, the leader on that defensive end and getting paid the amount of money, you've got to be able to put some sacks on there too. And you know, the Giants' defense for years has been predicated on the pass rush. And you look back at the years that they're successful on defense, they put pressure on the quarterback. And for some reason, they're just not getting to that quarterback this year or stopping the run. So they got to look themselves in the eye and really understand, you know, what do I got to do to get better? But, you know, in the long run, I think the JPP, it'll play itself out. The Giants organization are very good at evaluating not only the other players, but the players that are on their team that are going to be free agents. And they will put a price tag on what they feel that they need to pay him.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Marco. Appreciate the phone. Yeah, you got something else?
Just one more quick comment,
else?
And I'll take this one off the air. I don't want to put you guys on the spot with I'm going to make a comment about ownership and Tom Coughlin. I love Coach Coughlin. I want him to be here in the future. And last week, Tom Rock from Newsday, I guess, met with Tom Coughlin, or he met with John Mara, and he had a few comments that John Mara said he thinks Eli Manning still has – you know, good years ahead of him, and that was nice to hear. I'm concerned since his losing streak has started, there's been a ton of talk about what the media thinks Coach Coughlin's future is going to be. And I've been a little let down that ownership hasn't stepped up and said, hey, let's put this away. This is the way it's going to be. And I understand.
Well, what do you mean, this is the way it's going to be? What do you mean?
Well, I guess it's tough to come through on a six-game losing streak and say, hey, by the way, everyone, he's going to be our coach going forward. I would have liked to hear.
You know what? I will tell you this. How long have you been a Giants fan? Pretty long?
I've been a Giants fan for 25 years.
So you should know how this organization operates. They don't do things like that. They evaluate, and at the end of the day, they sit down and make the best decision for the organization and team. And listen, you know, that's what they'll do, and they'll continue to do, whether it's a new coach in here that doesn't do very well, if it's not Tom Coughlin or someone else, Matt. They do the right thing, and you know that. So
I do.
I think Giants fans have to be hopeful that the organization will do the right thing. And listen, I've been around it for going on 12, 13 years now, and in my mind, they do a lot of good things. And every organization does some things that fans don't like, but I'll tell you what, the Giant organization is very well respected in the way that they run things.
And so, Marco, appreciate the phone
call.
Thank
you, Marco.
Thanks so much for weighing in. One thing I wanted to piggyback off of what you were talking about with respect to JPP, I thought he battled Tyron Smith throughout that entire game.
What,
he gave him a hard time.
They were battling, and I think that, you know, when you can see things like that, and Tom will tell you, there's no moral victories in this league. But Tom always says about his team, if they lose the game and I see the fight and I see the competitiveness and I see these guys working and trying, that's good for me. And he will be the first to tell you that after a football game. Hey, he'll get on his press conference and say, hey, the guys fought their butts off. I thought they didn't quit on this. And that's what we saw out of JPP the other night. So statistics aren't always the marker in everything. And good personnel people around the league and coaches are able to see that. A lot of times fans may not, like us. They understand that maybe because he's not getting some sacks, but he may be doing some other things that are helping some other guys.
Now, you also mentioned you were a free agent. Did you ever get the franchise tag? I just wanted to make sure we could clarify that on the record.
No, and it's kind of, you think it's kind of a funny question, but it does happen quite often. The kickers and punters get the franchise tag, and it actually, in my career, it just started when they started coming out with that. But
don't time yourself here. Don't age yourself on this program.
Well,
I wouldn't want you
it's
to
been
that.
Around a while, but I would have loved to get the franchise tag. I think I could say that I did. You know, hey, I got the franchise tag. But did I step on something?
You may have stepped. I think we had a little power outage, but we're okay. We're back in business.
This has happened
to
me
before. Got sensitive feet over there.
I try to just keep my feet calm and collectively down here.
You got excited. We were talking contracts. So
I started using my feet again, kicking stuff around underneath here.
You're in the Giants facility. It's natural.
Yeah, but the franchise tag is always something you throw around, and each team can use it. And again, it all comes down to philosophy and what they want to do and salary cap. You look at the Giants next year, and they got some money under the salary cap going into next year. So, they're in a good position to spend some money, whether it's on your own guys or on free agents or what have you. But they got some money.
And with respect to the salary cap, in terms of facts here. Money you don't use one season, you can carry over to the next. So that's certainly a benefit with respect to the Giants. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. So glad you could join us here on a Tuesday. Big Blue Kickoff Live. He's Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow. Let's head back to the lines, and we'll check in with Bobby in Miami. Bobby, what's happening?
Yeah, Bobby.
All right, we lost Bobby. How about Phil in Montclair? Phil, what's happening?
Yeah, how you doing, man? How you doing, Jeff?
Doing well, Phil. What's on your mind today?
I think the issue with the Giants, it's just deeper than what we see now. It goes back to Jerry Reese. I don't think he's capable to build a team from the bottom up. A lot of those players from the Super Bowl teams were Ernie Accorsi's picks, and he just added pieces to it. But his main problem is he can't replace the players that we have that were the key to the success with comparable talent. They don't necessarily have to be, like how you retired Jeff and they went and got Matt Dodge. I mean, I don't expect anybody to be like you, but I mean, these are the talent that he's bringing in. You get what I mean? I mean, it's Tuck and Ofi leave and we're stuck
with
Kiwi and players that aren't on that caliber.
Let's talk about let's get away from the Giants for a second. You look around the league and you look at general managers and personnel departments. You know, there is no perfect science to this, but you look at you look at Jerry Reese, and when he came in after Ernie Accorsi, of course, you know, there is a process there where those draft picks and those free agents kind of move through. But then, you know, that was then you start to talk about the 2011 Super Bowl. There's a 4-year gap in there that Jerry Reese was working things through. All those players were back in 07, you know, they weren't all the same team. So there is some good things there, but it isn't a perfect science for any general manager or personnel department. And certainly everybody could do better. But you got to talk about, too, about some of the good things that these general managers do and some of the players that they do find. A Victor Cruz, for instance. You know, a guy like, I'll tell you one guy that, even though it wasn't Jerry Reese, but, you know, you go out like Rich Seubert. You know, undrafted guy who was a staple of that offensive line. So, you know, there's guys that are out there that you try to find as a general manager.
Yeah, but that was the course he's picked. I mean,
no, but
he,
I'm not
he
saying
signed,
it,
not,
I'm not,
not
comparing it to what Reese did. I'm just saying that there are guys every general manager does go out and find, and it can work out. So, you know, and listen, there's no question at all about how this team has got to operate going forward, because when you're only have won 3 games, you have to look at what's going on. And I said it in the previous caller, the organization does a nice job of evaluating at the end of the season, and they're going to have a plan. We don't know what that plan's going to be. We have no idea. But I have a good idea that what they're going to do is going to be in the best interest of the organization, and whether that's new players, new coaches, whatever, it doesn't matter. Mr. Mara, Mr. Tisch, the people will make these decisions. They make good decisions, and they will be fine.
And, Phil, appreciate the phone call. Let's try to squeeze in a few more calls here, and then we'll start to look ahead to the Jacksonville Jaguars as well as we take you till the top of the hour. Bobby is in Miami. Bobby, what's happening?
There you are, Bobby.
Hi. No problem. It's pretty cold out here, 75.
Are you a Canes fan?
Yeah, we feel for you. 75
yeah, I know,
degrees
I know.
In Miami.
Put it down my jacket. I just had a question. It's in regards to the major thing next year is to win the division, of course. And looking at the running attack of, you know, Alfred Morris, DeMarco Murray, and LeSean McCoy that we have to face. I think the last year with the Linval Joseph going, I think that was a big blow for the Giants because the run defense was pretty good last year. And my question to you was,
let me interrupt
free
you. Real
agent,
quick. I want to talk about that right there. You know, that was a big loss for the Giants at the time when Linval Joseph left. But, you know, they invested a second round draft pick in Jonathan Hankins, and I will tell you this. He may not be as good as Linval Joseph right now, but he has had a nice year. He has really developed into one of those guys who I think is going to be a staple in that middle of that line. So I just want to tell you that I think that they did a nice job with that draft pick, and I think he has done a really good job for the Giants so far.
And to add to that, we'll let you continue, Bobby. What you're touching on, Jeff, is the fact that there's a track record in place, because when Barry Cofield left, you had Linval Joseph. When Linval Joseph left, you have Jonathan Hankins. So they've always thought ahead of the game to have the next defensive tackle that can then move in and take the place.
And he's done a nice job. So, yeah, Bobby, what else you got?
My question right now was regarding is it better, because looking at the cap space, the Giants do have adequate cap space around $20 million, and if Eli extends and restructures his contract, I think there's a good amount of money. The question is, because would you rather have, I'm not going to put it, like, have JPP or like Ndamukong Suh, who's coming out in the free agent market, as an interior pass line rusher, which I think that even though the run defenses have been pretty good in the middle, I don't think they'd have collapsed the pocket as well as a Ndamukong Suh or one of those premier D tackles.
Lance, what do you think?
Well, I appreciate the phone call, Bobby. Thanks so much for weighing in. And Ndamukong Suh, I mean, it really comes down to the market, Jeff. I mean, it's hard to speculate what these guys are going to demand on the open market. I mean, that's
really
the
big
decision.
Well, you got to think that he's going to be – I think that Ndamukong Suh is going to get more money than JPP does. And so I think when you have a second-round draft pick and Hankins, the way he's played – we have to kind of see what happens with Colin Jenkins, where he's going to be in his career and how he comes back. I will tell you this. If they were able to sign him, is he going to make an impact? Yes. I mean, come on.
He's
seriously.
Impressed.
Okay, so I don't know. I'm not Jerry Reese. I don't know. I think that either way, if you go out and get a guy like that, and he certainly will do everything he can to – he'll improve that defense in a minute. But I think it's where your needs come in first, you know, and that's what the team will do at the end of the season. They'll evaluate where their needs are. They have the money in the cap space. They're gonna figure out what they want to do, they'll address their needs, whether it's offensive line, defensive line, cornerback position, running back, and you know, certainly when you look at Eli Manning at what he's doing this year, aside from what happened a week ago with the interceptions, five interceptions, but he was on pace to have such an unbelievable year, to set records, personal records for completion percentage, touchdowns. So you got to be excited about Eli coming back, even though he's a year older, but I think he's going to be a year more into the offensive system.
Well, Eli Manning still in his prime, and as you mentioned, another offseason with the same offense under his belt and Victor Cruz coming back healthy. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of upside for
this
offense.
So, you talk about everybody wants to talk about Eli, but Eli is not the problem with this football team this year. You can tell you that. I mean, I don't think they win three games without Eli. You know, I mean, he's had a big reason why they're sitting where they are with three wins is because of him.
And everybody points to that Seahawks game, but outside of that game, Jeff, ball security has been phenomenal for him this year.
Absolutely, and that was one of his goals coming into the season. I mean, he led the NFL in interceptions. I mean, you can only get, you know, you got to say to yourself, I got to get better in this. And, you know, you have some bad days at the office like he did 2 weeks ago, but really when you look at what he's done collectively the whole season, I think that he's really taken this offense on his shoulders and learning. You talk about Ben McAdoo always mentioning too about how his footwork, and he says it all the time in his press conference. Yeah, you know, my footwork wasn't that great. I was throwing off my back foot. This offense, you got to be quick with your feet, get them planted and throw the ball, and sometimes – when he has pressure, that's when your footwork goes foul. Listen, if I'm running at you and you normally have your feet pounding, you're going to move.
Yeah.
You got to get your footwork back to where it's supposed to be.
Well, it's the same thing with respect to your position. If somebody was coming at you, it's going to affect your mechanics too when you're releasing
absolutely.
For the punt.
Absolutely. And pressure for any position, especially where people are running at you and you're either kicking or you're throwing, it's not good. And if you have that pressure in your face, you make mistakes. And like, you know, Eli had said in this last game against Dallas with the interception that Preston Parker, you know, he had mentioned it was a bad throw. But I think if you go back and look at it, he had a little pressure there and he thought he was going to, you know, take more of a vertical angle on his pass route, but he hurt his throw a little bit and it overthrew Preston Parker. That was a big play in that game. That was a really big turning point because they turned that interception into points but the Giants answered. They came back with a 96-yard drive to go ahead touchdown, and you know, those are some of the good things that you pull out of a game even though you lost that we talked about earlier.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. And this next caller, Jeff, you and I had an opportunity to see him up close and personal. He stopped by the stage at MetLife Stadium this Sunday. Roldy is at Bayside. Roldy, what's happening?
Good morning, Lance. Good morning, Jeff. Yeah, it was great seeing you guys live in person. I really enjoyed that.
It's good to see you, too. Appreciate it.
I wanted to give props, you know, to Adam Snyder and Jeff Schwartz, mainly for Jeff Schwartz, especially, you know, first game back, really, you know, for him to be playing. He played very solid on Sunday. It was really good to see. I was kind of, like, disappointed. I kind of wanted to see Richburg in the middle instead of being benched, and I just wanted to see how he could operate with it as a center in the NFL, in the pro NFL, but we didn't get a chance to see that. But I was really excited to see what I saw out of Adam Snyder and Jeff Schwartz, you know, for especially his first game back. But what I wanted to talk about, it seemed like on the defensive line, it seems like whenever Robert Ayers and Demontre Moore was plugged into that defensive line, it seemed like, especially in the first half, it seems like we were creating more pressure on the quarterback. I mean, I know you hear this all the time from Giants fans. It's just like it's when you see two guys like that just creating pressure on the quarterback, there should be no reason why they're taking limited snaps and everything like that. And I just felt like from what I saw, whenever I saw Demontre Moore and Robert Ayers that was in there, you know, they were just bringing the pressure up there. And I just couldn't understand towards the end of the game how we didn't have these guys there. So I just wanted you guys to touch on that. That we got to see more. If guys are producing like Robert Ayers and Demontre Moore, we got to put them in more. in the lineup because when I saw the pressure, it was because those two guys were in that defensive line. So just wanted to hear what you guys wanted to say about that comment. Thank you, guys.
And Roldy, thanks for the phone call. And Jeff, before I get your perspective on that, Tom Coughlin actually addressed the very question that Roldy just posed, and I just want to read
to our listeners what
his response was. He was specifically asked about the personnel that was on the field on that final drive, and this is what Tom Coughlin's response was. Those things have been discussed long and hard in the meeting rooms today, and I think that you're right. Hindsight is 20/20. I can just tell you there were reasons why perhaps Robert, referring to Robert Ayers, wasn't in there. There was sound thinking behind that. I can tell you that there was, if you remember the play in which we jumped, there was a pressure call there, and he's referring to in that drive, Mathias Kiwanuka is called offsides, so that's exactly what Tom Coughlin was referring to. So he goes on to say that that play, I quite frankly think that we scared ourselves out of that because of the penalty. We know Tony Romo very, very well. When allowed to stand back there and have no pressure on him and wait for people to run and get open, he made a career out of that. I hear you, and on paper, theoretically, I agree with you, referring to the reporter who asked the question. We all feel that there should have been more done, more accomplished, perhaps even throughout the entire game, but definitely in that last drive, we'd love to be able to do it over. And Robert Ayers has been a significant
great addition to this defense. Has had an outstanding year. He's leading the team in sacks.
With five.
DeMontre Moore, he has a tremendous motor, a tremendous upside. He's still young. I think in critical points of the football game, you want to put those on your veterans, the guys that are not going to make mistakes. And even though Kiwanuka did make a mistake jumping off sides, but you know what? Tony Romo's smart. He knows that those guys got their ears pierced back and they're ready. He goes hard count and gets them on gets a free 5 yards. What Tom is trying to kind of take a little bit of what he's trying to say there is that I think when you look back at it, yeah, we had these discussions in the meetings and hindsight's 20/20, but there was a reason why that personnel was in there. Okay, I don't know what it is. I'm not Perry Fuel. I don't know why, but we are kind of questioning it, like you guys are. And you say, why? But I don't know why he wasn't in there. And it's just it just happens. Those guys that are in there got to make the plays. There's no question about that. And I think that Tom would probably tell you the same thing. Doesn't matter who's in there, make a play.
And in terms of the players that they chose to put in there on the final drive, Jeff, I'm curious your perspective. 3 minutes left on the clock. Dallas obviously has a sense of urgency to get down the field, but I think you also need to game plan to stop the run. You can't just focus about getting to Tony Romo because with 3 minutes, and they ran the ball with DeMarco Murray at least on one of those plays. I'd have to look back to get specifics. I think he had a 9-yard run. So therefore, you also need to account to have your best run stuffers in addition to getting to the quarterback.
And maybe those guys, they thought, hey, listen, with that time on the clock still, they weren't, they can still run the football in here. We not only need our best guys in the game to rush the passer, we got to have our best guys in the game to can play the run, too. So, really, when you think about it, if you knew that they were going to come out and throw the football and then no threat of running, you could have had every pass rusher in there. Robert Ayers plays inside. He could have come inside. You could have put JPP, Kiwanuka, and DeMontre Moore on that defensive line and rushed them. But then they just gash you on a draw play or a lead, whatever, with DeMarco Murray. So there is a little substance behind why Perry Fuel and the personnel package he had in there.
And time, I think, is one factor that can't be overlooked, given the fact that the Cowboys had timeouts and it wasn't in a position where there's a minute left and they just have to throw. Let's head back to the phone lines. Let's check in with Drew in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Hey, guys. What's happening, Lance?
Hi, Drew.
Jeff, I'm sorry, man. What's going on, man? How you guys doing?
What are you sorry for?
Hey, man. I be forgetting names at times, man.
No worries. We have a rotation of hosts here. It's understandable. You have to have a pen and pencil out to determine who's hosting.
There's no other – any guy that sits in this chair right here – they're not as good a looking as I am. So, this is an easy one. What's
and
up, Jeff? That's
chair.
All you got to say.
Yeah.
Hey, man, first and foremost, man, on your last point, man, real quick, man. I feel like Dallas just played the defense that was out there, okay? Dallas played the defense that was out there, and, there was just nothing out there that was going to stop them. Hey, let me just say something real quick, man. this is the last 3 weeks. These are the numbers, you know, that I'm looking at. And we already know them, but just a quick rehash. 350, 5, and 7.5. 350 yards, 5 interceptions, and 7.5 seconds. Okay, I mean, you know, these are staggering numbers that get you losses. Now let's talk about this defense first of all, Matt. This team is just getting pushed around. Okay. Hello.
Yeah, we're here. We're listening, Drew.
We're listening.
What else?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I thought I got disconnected. I'm sorry. Yeah. This. You know, this team is just getting manhandled. Now, you know, we can talk about all the coaches and do this and that and that. You know, bottom line, man, it's this team as a whole is just getting manhandled one way or the other. And, I mean, it's just, you know, to me, Matt, and Carl Banks mentioned this the other day during the game, man, it's just toughness. This team just does not have toughness, man. You know, am I missing something here, guys?
Well, no, you're not missing. No, you're not, because, you know, if you watch football enough to know, okay, and they always say it's one in the trenches. Well, what's the definition of being winning the game in the trenches? It's the first word starts with the P, and that's physical play at the point of attack. Okay, so, you know, that's where it starts. If you got the defensive line, the offensive line have to be your toughest, physical, nastiest guys, and it all flows from there. Okay, so you're not missing the point at all. I mean, you look at the run defense on the defensive side, and then you look at some of the protection and the running game on the offensive side. It goes to what you're saying. Okay, so is it just all about physicality? Is it all about personnel? Is it all about maybe mental mistakes? All this comes into effect from that standpoint.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, but for me, it's just physical, and from that standpoint, I'm sorry, man, you got to look at Perry Fuel and his pick. I'm not going to stay on that too long, but I don't want to see people fired or whatever. But you know, first and foremost, in my heart of hearts, I know. You know, I just feel that's going to be a change, man. There's no doubt about this because we have gotten worse, not better. Worse. Okay. Yeah, I understand offensively. I understand we got a new offense in there, but we still got issues on this offensive line. That's got to be fixed, man. This defense is just horrendously atrocious. And then the last thing I want to ask you guys about.
Well, hold on, Drew. Let me just talk to you a little bit about that. When you're a three win football team, there's a lot of things that have to be fixed. Okay. I mean, you guys, honestly, right? I mean, so. And it goes all around. And not only do the players have to look themselves in the mirror, the coaches have to coach better. It's all the old cliches that you hear when you're a 3-7 football team. Okay? Three and eight. But you know, so that is what you're looking at. You got problems, you gotta fix them, okay? And players are players, coaches are coaches. The coaches give them the game plan, the players execute the game plan, okay? Is there breakdowns in both? There's always breakdowns in both. There's breakdowns in both when they're 10-6 or whatever, when you have 10 wins and 6 losses. So you got to get better. You got to get better as a player. You got to be able to study harder. You got to go out there and make plays. And one of the problems with the Giants team this year is when we look at our stats and we go into our pregames, and Lance does a hell of a job of giving me all this stuff. And we look every week, I look at these big plays for the offense or the defense. They're not getting them this year. And that hurts. No. And that's part of winning is big plays.
Right. And, you know, and again, my last point is, and actually, Matt, thanks for that. I mean, you know, again, that's an excellent point. And the last question that I got for you guys, man, is, again, you know, I got to say this again. You know, I'm a big Eli defender, and I'm going to constantly continuously defend Eli.
Good.
But I'm telling you right now, guys, that's my boy. I like Eli. But he don't get passes either with me. Okay? Come on, let's he doesn't get a pass with me either with regards to some of his play.
Well, he'll tell you that he's got to play better. I mean, he told you in the press game, the pros game, about the throw to Preston Parker with the interception. He said, I got to throw a better ball. I got to do this. I got to do that.
I mean, that was a ridiculous throw. But let me just make this – let me just ask
real,
this
real
question.
Real quick, Drew.
I'm going to take the answer off the air, okay? Ever since Eli got hurt last year, I feel like he's starting to hear footsteps because he's making some throws where – prior to that, he wouldn't have made some of those throws. So I'm thinking Eli's starting to hear footsteps, and that's dangerous for a quarterback. Let me know what you guys think.
All right, Drew, appreciate the phone call. Well, I don't think Drew – I don't know if Drew meant to say what he said, but Eli wasn't hurt last year. I mean, he was okay. I mean, he may have had some bumps and bruises, but that's pure speculation at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he hurt his ankle and he had off-season surgery. But, I mean, you know, and I've said this before. I don't care if you're Eli Manning, Fran Tarkenton, Bart Starr. If you have pressure, okay, in your face, you're going to make mistakes. And you know, so you got to have – you got to – Eli – I'm telling you, it's not Eli Manning. It's not Eli Manning. I mean, he can be better, but I just think the Eli stuff's got to go. I mean, the guy has done well. I mean, he's played good this year, and yeah, he's played some bad games, but the fact is that he's holding this team together offensively.
Well, and when you look at the narrative, Jeff, of Eli Manning this season, and I was touching on this earlier, prior to the Seahawks game, you know, it's hard to get around Seahawks game because, he threw five interceptions, but if you eliminate that game from the conversation,
and then come into this game against Dallas,
even though he did throw a pick, I mean, that's a nice resume this season. I mean, he's done very good protecting the football.
He was over 300 yards again passing. I mean, those five interceptions, they kind of just, you know, they muddle everything, you know.
And that's what happens. One game, yeah.
It's one game, and in this profession, it's what have you done for me lately? And if you look at what he did last week, he put the Giants in position. Actually, he put him in a position to win. They took a 96-yard drive down in the fourth quarter to win the game. They took it, and then, of course, the defense kind of let him down in the last two plays of the game.
We'll head back to the phone lines in a minute, but we first want to remind you that listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now. Enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We check in with Nugs in Minnesota. Nugs, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
Doing well, Nugs. What you got?
Hey, it's an honor to get to talk to you finally, Jeff. You know, I watched you for plenty of years. You was my guy.
All right. Well,
I can tell you from personal experience.
You're my guy with Nugs. I like that. That's good.
I wanted to piggyback on a couple of things that the earlier caller said about Ndamukong Suh. I live up here in Minnesota, so we get a little bit more NFC North news, and he said that he's going to test free agency and that he would love to play for the Giants. But he also said something slick in an interview about wanting to further his brand and New York being a good city for that or whatnot. And I'm just saying, it's kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't type thing, because I'm just seeing him being like a Albert Haynesworth type situation where you give him all this money because of what he did previously, and then he gets here and he's more concerned about, you know what I mean, the endorsements and stuff like that and the off-the-field stuff that comes with being in New York rather than concentrating with what's on the field.
That's
now, I have
point.
Also one more other question, and then I'm just going to take it off the air. Let's say we can get JPP at a hometown discount. You know, let's say he doesn't try to break the bank and he's reasonable. I remember Strahan starting off on the right side of the line and then moving over to the other side of the line. It seems like JPP he stepped up as a run stopper, but we're not going to get – it looks like those 15, 16 sack years are gone. And do you see anything where maybe – you know, and whether or not we get Ndamukong Suh, do you see anything where we could maybe move JPP over to the left side so he can be more of a run stopper, have less pressure on him to produce from sacks, and maybe, you know, draft another pure pass rusher or give, you know, DeMontre or somebody a chance to, you know, step that sack production up? And I'll just take it off.
All right, Nugs, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Jeff, let me ask you this. Do you find it to be effective if you can move personnel from one side of the line to the other? I mean, does that work out from the experience that you've seen?
No. I mean, it may work a little bit here and there in game planning purposes. You know, maybe if you're going to do it and you got another team that's game planning JPP being on the right side and all of a sudden he lines up on the left side and, you know, they're pros on the other side. Usually the tackles are your best players, so they're going to be able to handle a JPP on the right or a JPP on the left. You know, the caller alluded to, you know, back in the day when Strahan mixed and matched on each side, but, you know, it's worth a try. I don't know, to be honest with you, but I will tell you that if you do it in games and you're not only messing with a guy that's played predominantly on the right side, you know, you got your right hand in the dirt or left hand in the dirt, whatever it is, there is some different techniques that you have to learn, which not only in the game, you have to do it in practice. So it kind of goes that way. But I think that the whole premise behind moving a guy around is to get matchups. And the National Football League, it's all about matchups. So you got a guy like DeMontre Moore, to me, would be more of an option to move around because he's a little athletic. He's he's kind of a young guy that hasn't really learned all the attributes of being a right end or a left end. And then Robert Ayers, of course, you know, you look at what he does. He lines up all over the place.
Yeah.
And he's very good athlete. He's very good athlete. He's a very good athlete, and he can move around like that. But a guy like JPP, I think you just need to get him in a position where he can make plays and work on his technique and find out something that he's doing and get those sacks up. Because you know he can do it. He did it before.
And he did it Sunday, as we were
talking
about.
And you
got
to think about
Smith.
When he did do it. You know, a lot of guys, he was a rookie, and nobody really knew about him, and nobody was paying attention to him. He didn't get a lot of the chip blocks and guys, you know, coming out there and hitting him when he got through. So he's got to learn how to fight through those.
And if you look over the course of his resume this season specifically, Jeff, it's not as if teams are not focusing on JPP.
No,
his
are.
Mere presence draws attention, so therefore you would hope that would open up opportunities for others.
And it should, but it's just not happening. The Giants may have a lot of pressures and hits on the quarterback, but those are all fine and dandy, but they're not big plays. They're not sacks. They're not drive killers. They're not potential fumbles and whatnot. So the ultimate game at that defensive end position is to get sacks.
Let's head back to the lines. Charlie is in Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Lance. Hey, Jeff. How y'all doing?
Doing well, Charlie. What you got for us today?
Good. Hey, Lance, you're saying that Eli threw 5 interceptions against the Seahawks. Actually, it was the 49ers, not the Seahawks.
That's what we meant. The 49ers.
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
Thank
right,
you for correcting
right.
us. Yes, we get caught up in the
mix. He was just a little, it was the same division.
That's, yes,
you
know. It was just a mix-up of the
you
team.
You guys are close.
But I
hey,
do appreciate
I
the clarification.
I just got a few things to say, and I hope you would just listen for a minute. And one of the things is that in that last drive, Dallas driving down, especially the last two or three plays, the defensive line was gassed. You could see they were gassed, especially before the last play. They couldn't even get next to Romo. Romo had time to go Christmas shopping and come back and throw the ball. At that point, Fuel should have realized, these guys are gassed. I got to change it up. Put in Ayers, put in Moore at that point because they needed a pass rush. And the thing is, he didn't do that. He put Patterson in there. They couldn't get anywhere close to Romo, and that's why they got the touchdown.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you think with that offensive line of the Cowboys in a crunch time position with the way that they have been playing all year, that even though now we're talking about the last couple minutes of the fourth quarter of a game where Ayers has played, I think he played, you know, a little bit of not as much as we thought he would.
That, 20 snaps.
That, yeah, you could say that they might have gotten a chance to sack Romo, but that offensive line, I you can't discount what they did in those last two plays.
No offensive line gives quarterback 7 seconds.
I get
you know?
That, but I'm
well,
saying.
Well, but
I
Charlie,
guess,
if you, I don't mean to cut you off, Jeff. Right. If you look at the Cowboys' resume this season and their games, I mean, they've given Tony Romo an immense amount of time, not just against the Giants. It's happened more often than not.
I know, but the point is that Fuel doesn't use his personnel. He should have known. Kiwi said it after the game that they were gassed. You know, and the thing is, he should have known that. And we, especially after the one play when, you know, they couldn't get even close to him to change it up, and he didn't do it. And the other, I just want to say one more thing.
Sure.
We made a big mistake in not keeping Will Hill and not keeping Tuck. Because if we had kept Tuck at that point, you see what Tuck did in that last game? He, you know, called a timeout. He was smart enough to call a timeout when his defense was not, you know, running down the field, not even paying attention, you know? So
Well, I think you mentioned those two players, and certainly from Justin Tuck, he had an opportunity to stay here, that the Giants made him an offer, and he decided to go elsewhere. And in Will Hill, I'm glad to see that Will Hill is playing. I'm glad to see that maybe his life is getting turned around, and some good things for him. But those are tough decisions that they had to make, and obviously those two guys. We could talk about all the players in the world going somewhere else and playing well, but we could also talk about all the guys that they say we've kept, and maybe they haven't played well, you know. So,
and Charlie, appreciate the phone call. One of the things I do want to piggyback Jeff off of with respect to what Charlie just mentioned, you know, he mentioned that he thought the Giants players were gassed. If you look at time of possession, and Tom Coughlin was even asked about this, he didn't think the defense was tired at all because
The Giants had a 10-minute advantage.
Yeah, more so than the Cowboys. So that doesn't add up if you make that argument.
Well, it doesn't, Ben. And, you know, it's just one guy's opinion. I mean, if you can think that. And Kiwanuka, I don't know how many plays he played. But, in that point of the game, they're in their two-minute offense. And, you know, the Cowboys, I'll tell you this. I'll give you an example. Early in the first half, the Giants offense, I liked what they were doing. They were going no huddle early, and this wasn't a matter of conditioning. This was a no huddle on purpose to eliminate the personnel changes that Dallas makes on their defensive side. When you get in a two-minute offense, the offense is going to do the same thing. They're going to eliminate the personnel changes. So it's not as easy as you think to running guys in and out and in and out because the Cowboys are in their hurry-up offense. So that could have been a part of why that they were gassed too. So, I'm just trying to break it down a little bit and show you a little perspective. But, you know, earlier in the game, the Giants did a nice job of keeping their personnel in and eliminating the substitutions that Dallas was doing. And look what happened. The first three drives of the first half, they score points.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Greg, my computer is playing games with me. Who else do we have on the line here? Shakes we have? Okay, so let's head to Shakes, who's on the line in Maryland. Shakes, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on,
Lance? Doing well, Shakes. What you got?
Hey, what's going on, Jeff?
Hi.
First, can I say this before I get into any points about Giants? I just wanted to say to my boy, Steve from D.C., I need him to get well soon. He's in the hospital right now, and I want all the Giant Nation to just give him a good prayer. His Twitter feed is at newbro1, so if y'all can just give him some best wishes or whatnot, it'll be best. But, yeah, get well soon, brother.
Well, we do, Shakes, and I don't mean to cut you off. I didn't know about that, but we do wish Steve in D.C., who calls up to this program on a daily basis, hope he is doing well. I did not know he was in the hospital, but we do wish him and his family well. Hope he does recover.
Absolutely, especially in the holiday season here.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, and now let me get on these Giants. First off, I love what you said, Jeff, about Eli, because I've been saying it all year.
Good.
That I don't care if you're Peyton Manning, I don't care if you're Tom Brady, or you're Joe Montana, you're not going to be successful if you don't have an offensive line protecting you. Just simple and plain.
Let's just call it pressure. I like to use the word pressure, because then we're not talking about five guys. We're just talking about one word, right?
Right.
Okay.
Nice and simple.
Pressure. Let's go with that. Pressure.
All right. There we go. Now that we got that out.
Now, last week I was talking to you, Lance, and I think it was John. But I was saying how when you get into the goal line and you throw three straight fade routes, that's just stupidity to me. Now, y'all brought up the fact that, you know, we went 14 for 14 going in the goal line situation, and that's cool. But to me, and I guess I'm a creature of bad habit of, you know, being old school, but when you get into the goal line situation, you have to run the ball. And we've seen it in last game that we ran the ball. We got to the goal line situation. First off, we got into a goal line situation and gave it to my boy Williams the first time, and he scored.
All right, okay? Shakes, hold on. I'm going to interrupt you because we're going to take this in sections, all right? So I just want you to understand, okay? You got another P word, okay? We got pressure. We got personnel, okay? Mm-hmm. When you put a play in the game, all right, you know you got options, all right? The quarterbacks know that. You know this. When you get eight in the box and you got a run call, what are you doing? You're checking out of it, okay? Because your matchups on the outside are better chance than the eight guys and you're on the 4-yard line now, all right? So Eli, what's he do? He checked out of that run play. There was a run play called, checked out of it for a pass. So that was the first play, all right? So Go ahead and continue. I just wanted to make sure. We had a run.
I get that fact, but still, it should have been a jumbo package. It should have been a goal line package in that play.
Okay,
but
that's a good point. You could have that. Yeah.
Regardless of that. When we get down to the goal line, what we do, we ran it two straight times. And I'm not talking about the winners when Williams scores. I'm talking about when we scored with the Adrian Robinson.
Sure.
But we ran it two straight times.
Oh, you mean with Andre Williams?
Down, hold on. Let me get this point out. You see, on third down, we play action pass and Adrian Robinson wide open. That's what happens when you run the ball and you have the defense on their toes. Now you do three straight fade routes and they know that's what you do when you get down there. It's just simple to try to stop that. You know it's coming. Run the ball, man. Goal line, you got to be a man.
Shakes, just for clarification purposes, the point you're making, and just in case the audience can't follow, that play was with Rashad Jennings initially, who was stuffed at the line. Then Henry Hynoski, they ran up the middle. He was stuffed at the line. And then Adrian Robinson was able to convert on that.
Yes, sir.
So they did set up the run to help get the pass.
Last week was it opens it up for the play action pass if you don't get in those two rundowns. And they should have, and I think Williams would have had got in, but that's hearsay.
Yep.
Like I said, you run the ball when you get down there. And last game proved me right, evident.
All right, well, you can pat yourself on the back a few times, Shakes. I'm sure you're loving that.
Shakes, what do you think about the Giants going down to Jacksonville this week? You think they got it in them to go down and get a road win?
Oh, we're going to beat – I'm not going to curse, but we're going to beat their butt. We're going to beat their butt.
Yeah.
They're not ready for us. ODB will have a big game. Trust.
The Giants got to be careful getting overconfident. You know, they're a 3-8 team, and you know, so, and that's you know, we were talking off the air before we came on, and Lance had asked me, you know, you got to be careful here, and it's the truth. You got to be careful because listen, you know, these guys, they're a confident group, even though they lost the game last week, because I think they played a really good game against a division opponent, you know, a lot on the line, trying to get that win. And I think now going on the road, they can bring some of those things that they did last game and go down and play a Jacksonville team. And remember, Jacksonville is one of 32 teams in the National Football League. You look at what the Raiders did. The Raiders, they
Kansas
beat
City
Kansas
on
City.
Thursday, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So it can happen at any given Sunday, as they say. So, but, you know, it is a good – we knew that at the beginning of the season that the end of the season was going to be in some games that they're winnable games. So if you positioned yourself in the middle of the season with wins, this would have been really set up well. Well, right now the Giants are sitting there going, you know what, hey, we can kind of finish the season on a good note with a good taste in our mouth, and it starts with Jacksonville this Sunday.
And Shakes, appreciate the phone call.
Thanks, Shakes.
Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thank y'all.
We've got a few more callers on the line. Want to try to squeeze him in. A few more minutes left in the program. Let's go to Al in East Orange. Al, what's happening? Al, are you there?
Hey, fellas. I'm here.
All right, Al.
I just want to say two things. For the last caller who just was on, you know, everybody want to scream about the fades. Well, what I seen was Eli throw a ball that I felt was very catchable by Reuben Randle, who didn't make the catch. And second, the very play after that, Larry Donnell didn't come down with the ball that he had in his hand. So we wouldn't be talking about no fade or the play call if Larry Donnell does his job and secure the ball, because he jumped over the guy, had the ball with two hands, didn't come down and hold on to the ball. And that's just the bottom line.
Sure.
So I want to leave. I just want the fans to leave that play calling alone, because it's not like it was just horrible. Somebody did not make the play.
There you go.
That was Larry Donnell.
That's what Tom talked about.
Tom said the same exact thing. Yeah.
Make a play. That's what he
said. Make
says.
The play.
Somebody got to make the play.
I want to say one more thing. I just want to say I wish the fans would really get off of JPP's back. No, he's not having 12 and 13 sacks, but I think we're getting away from a big problem that's become has been a problem for a few years now. This linebacking core for the Giants can't stop nobody. I heard you say earlier that they did good last year, and that's when Beeson was there. But like I said, when is Beeson going to stay healthy? He hasn't been healthy for years. And we're hoping that he can get back to playing well and sturdy off of what he did years ago. They have the defensive NFL MVP in Carolina. So that tells you that they went and found somebody to replace him who's doing very well. And I just like to point out to everybody who's riffing about that line, understand why Perry Fuel did not blitz and let four men go in there, because, like you said, for one, they were keeping a hurry-up offense in there. And for two, when we did blitz, the linebackers didn't get there, and Beasley burned us for a touchdown.
And the quarterbacks, that's just the fact. The quarterbacks today, especially Tony Romo, they will make you pay for a blitz. And especially with the personnel sometimes that are in the game with the Giants, they are depleted at that linebacking position. And so, you know, you blitz, you better be able to get cover.
There. Yeah, you better get there. Exactly. And Jamil McClain, who was the blitzer on that play, didn't even get a whiff of him. And by the way, he's playing a position that we didn't ask him to come here for, because everybody's beloved Beeson is out hurt once again.
All right, Al.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, when you were there, Jeff, I'm pretty sure when you was on that sideline, you didn't watch a bunch of people run 350 yards up and down on the Giants. You didn't see a bunch of quarterbacks just, hey, I'm going to keep the ball because the right side of the field is wide open. I mean, you're not going to get a successful pass rush when the offense is constantly stuck in a third and two, third and three, where they're not going to drop seven steps. They're not going to drop five. They're going to throw it to their tight end or people like Beasley. So before we want to, you know, get all on JPP's back about not having – making sack numbers look so well, let's just look at how this linebacking core is not stopping anybody when it comes to the run.
All right, Al, appreciate the phone call.
Plays,
we got to let you go, Al, because we want to try to squeeze in a few other calls. And Al, very passionate this morning, and, you know, was certainly alluding to the last drive in terms of the blitz, and it is a catch-22, Jeff.
Well, it is. You can sit there and analyze it all you want. Some guys have a difference of opinion, but you know, we try to talk about on this show, you know, kind of the good and the bad, the ugly, and try to get into it a little bit. But you know, bottom line is, I think that the Giants played a good game. I think that they at the end of the drive, the last two plays of the game, those were the game, and they didn't do what they had to do and get pressure on Tony Romo. And when you ask the defensive backs to cover for 7 seconds, that's a long time to be covering man-to-man or whatever coverage they were in.
And you just mentioned Tony Romo, unlike other quarterbacks, makes it much more difficult because he's elusive. He's mobile.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, just because you have him collapse in the pocket doesn't mean you're bringing him down.
No.
He could easily run outside
Absolutely.
And extend the play.
And you see what he can do with his feet. And then when he gets outside that pocket and your linebackers or whoever is closing in on him and then aborts this coverage, he's going to find the guy.
Joe is in Pennsylvania. Joe, what's happening?
Hi. I just it's obvious, you know, Dallas has a good front offensive line. But what I was upset there coming down the end is that, you rush the front four, but it just seemed like they were just rushing straight ahead, no stunts, no moving around or something. When we play other teams, you know, like the Eagles, I can recall that game. It upset me so much. They were coming up the middle on us like it was no end, you know, moving players around. And I mean, I think you give yourself a little better chance by trying to run some stunts or something like that, you know. And like you said, if you're going 7 seconds, 8 seconds, there's nobody going to hold up against them receivers that long. You have to take a chance and once in a while send a linebacker. So I think they'd have to do it over again, you know. That they would try something else on that. That's basically it. You
well,
know?
And Joe, you're essentially echoing the same sentiments that Tom Coughlin mentioned in his conference call, and I read that earlier. He said, listen, 2020's hindsight, of course, we look back at the film, and there were some things we would have made some tweaks if we could go back and redo it. He said those exact words to the media.
But what I'm getting at, the last few drives were like that. It wasn't just the last winning drive. It was the drive before that they gave them too much time, and that they had to try something different, and they did nothing. You know what I mean? I can't blame. I'm not saying that the front four wasn't doing it all, but there was no stunts. It was straight ahead. It was the same original blocking. They were double teaming up the middle. The tackles were basically handling it themselves. It was straight ahead. There was no, you know what I mean? No crisscrossing, no nothing. That's what really, really got me there, you know?
All right, Joe. Well, appreciate the phone call, and
yeah,
clearly a lot of people.
Whatever, but you knew, like, coming into the season, the offense was definitely they were behind. So, you know, same thing. Next year, I couldn't handle this next year. If you know, we have to give the offensive line a pass this year. We have to give Eli a pass this year. We had so many injuries. We got to take that into consideration on the defensive backs.
All right, Joe. Well, listen, I appreciate the phone call. It's a little too early to speculate about next season. Right now there's 5 games left, and certainly the Giants are looking to finish off on a strong note. Want to try to squeeze in one more caller before we wrap up the show. Damian's in Philly. Damian, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, my man?
Doing well, Damian. What's on your mind? What you got?
Yeah, I just want to tell people for real, man. Look, I ain't no Dallas fan, but for real, man, you got to get Dallas offensive line to brought the praise that they get, man, for real. Them boys, that last drive, man, was crazy.
Crazy.
But anyhow, the question is, I got so much things I want to say, but I can't say. I know y'all going to run out of time soon. So basically what I want to ask right now is, all right, the season almost over. Who do you think we should go over, like offensive line in the draft or mostly defense? I just want to get you all wrapped on that.
Well, I think I think it's need. You know, when you're talking about need, I think you got to figure out, hey, you know what, where can we from the draft, I think you start at free agency first. You figure out, hey, what can we do to help the offense, the defense? You go in and you evaluate as soon as the season is over, and you say, hey, you know what, we did bring some offensive linemen in here last year as free agents and gave some money to those. So where do you go next year? You look at who's going to be a free agent. You look at who they're not going to bring back. You look at who, you know, whose contracts are expiring. And all that goes into one big concept at the end of the year that the management will get together, and then you just address that need. You know, I think it starts from the beginning when we started talking about this. It all starts up front. So I think, to me, you start there, and you're looking at how you're doing, how the evaluation goes, and you just kind of move on from there. You know?
All right, Damian, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. That's going to wrap up our phone call segment for today's show. Certainly appreciate everybody chiming in, and we want to remind everybody that listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now. Enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millions. Millionaires. Enter Blue for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Jeff, always a pleasure.
Lance.
We
yeah,
will speak
always.
To you on Sunday, getting you set for the Giants and the Jaguars on the Giants Radio Network.
1 o'clock game?
1 o'clock. That's right. Our pregame coverage will get started at 11:30. Anita Marks and Robin Oben will take you the way tomorrow, and we will have Big Blue Kickoff live here each and every weekday at noon Eastern. Appreciate the calls and the tweets as always. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. We will speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Oh, here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
What a get no punch. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.